Hi, I'm Max Moynihan.
And I'm Henry Lin, and this is Better World. Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it.
And when you look at the systems that exist today, they don't make it easy to do the right thing. And I think that's what's kind of cool about what we're doing as a company. There is individual action taking place, right? This is something you can do in your home. But it's a collective effort to build a new system that is circular. So this isn't just, what we're building as a company and as a system isn't just one person doing one action in isolation. A bunch of people taking part in it enables us to build a new pathway and a new loop.
Max, trash is a real problem, and I'm not just talking about the kind that I date.
I'll take your use of trash for that joke, but I'm actually going to correct you and we're going to call it waste because trash is something that you throw out, and like people don't think about it. We don't know where it goes, but waste is a much more inclusive term because there's so many things you can do with what we consider waste. It doesn't have to be trash. You know what? One man's,
Ooh, trash
what's
is
the
another man's
thing?
treasure. That's the
Yes,
one.
that one, that
Yeah,
one, that
that's the
one.
one.
So this is a, to me, I love talking about waste. I think it's a sexy topic, the opposite of what most people think. And I'm very excited.
Over one third of the food produced in the United States is never eaten. Uneaten food is the most common material in landfills. 24% of landfills is food waste. Runner-ups are plastics, paper and cardboard, and textiles. Ooh, what stats on stats. And our kitchens are the number one source of food waste. 51% of this waste comes from homes. This waste converts into methane and carbon, and methane is 80 times more potent than CO2 over 20 years. That's really, really, really horrible. Max, is there a solution?
Ooh, great question. So, I mean, I would say the first obvious solution is to reduce our waste and just be smarter about how we are sourcing things and how much we're buying and how much we're throwing out, and also not feel completely an individual burden on that because the systems also can do a lot to reduce waste. But when it comes to your leftovers that you can't eat, that you can't freeze, that you can't give to your animals, let's say, there is a solution and it's called MIL. And MIL is a waste prevention service that takes the food you can't eat at home, conserves the nutrients, and gets it back to farms where it can feed chickens. So it is, we're going to get into this. It's not compost, which put a pin in that because it's really interesting. And we're
Dun, 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 dun,
speaking
dun.
with, yeah, thank you for the sound effects, Harry Tannenbaum, who's the president and co-founder of MIL. And Harry used to be at Nest. He's done a lot of cool things there. People know that, like the thermostats. I mean, who doesn't know what a Nest is? And this is his newest thing. So, Harry, welcome to the pod. Thanks for being here.
It's awesome to be here.
Okay, let's start with question one. Why isn't this compost?
Okay, so we can just go right there.
Let's just do it. I'm too
Let's just go to the big
curious.
one. Dive
Okay, so
right in.
just to ground everybody, I'm Harry. I grew up in San Francisco. I started a company called Mill. As Max mentioned, the first step, the first part of this sort of waste prevention service that we've built, is a new kind of bin that goes in your kitchen. And it kind of looks like a normal bin. It's about 2 feet tall, and it eats all the food that you can't eat. And what happens in the bin is that we grind the food you can't eat up and we dry it out down to about 13% moisture content. This is something that's kind of interesting about food. There are a lot of things I learned about food in this journey, but fun fact, food is between 70 to 85% moisture content normally. So when we dehydrate it and take the water out, we get food minus water, and it turns into this sort of coffee ground type material that we call food grounds, which is ground food.
Would you say you're dehydrating it the way my dehydrator makes apple chips?
Yeah,
Oh, cool.
we're, but I mean, not maybe the same mechanism. We're sort of
Right.
grinding it with paddles. But the reason that this is not compost is because composting is a microbial process, specifically an aerobic process with oxygen where microbes digest the nutrients.
You're breaking stuff down.
Different kinds of materials. And that's been talked about on the pod here in other episodes. You know, you have some kind of material.
Why did you choose to break it down with the paddles?
Why would we choose to break it down with the paddles?
Yeah, I mean, why not aerate it, or what's the special thing about the paddle versus some of these other things that you're now talking about?
Right. So the composting process takes time. When we make compost, what we're making is a stable soil amendment where the volatile organics in a material have been digested by a microbe. This is an awesome thing. We're actually like totally inspired by composting, but it takes weeks to happen. And when we think about the problem we're trying to solve, we don't have weeks for that, because what we're trying to do is effectively eat all the food that you can't eat in your kitchen and make it not stink, make it really small, and get it to its highest and best use. And the paddles are part of it. Now, Henry, we get into a little bit of a technical discussion, but we're heating the food up and we're grinding it up. And we like the paddles because it breaks things down into smaller pieces. But the reason that it's pretty cool that this is still food is that we can use it as food. And I think like the big idea behind this company is we're trying to build a new system that's circular. And a lot of what we're trying to do in climate is move from a linear system to a more circular regenerative system. And if you think about composting, that's a circular loop, but it's a pretty big loop. We take food, we feed it to microbes, we make a soil amendment. Hopefully we get that back into the food system, you know, gets land applied at a farm, then we can grow grain, and maybe we feed that to an animal. Whereas if we take food, take the water out, and can use that as food again, it's a really tight loop. And that's kind of, we jumped right into it, but we weren't so clever to get to this on day one, but actually we sort of found our way here through a process of experimentation and learning and thinking about processes.
Well, I was going to ask, what was the itch that you were trying to scratch? What was the problem that you were trying to solve when you started out?
So the backstory on that was, you know, I worked at Nest for like a decade, and I joined Nest in the first place to work on climate change. And you fast forward a bunch of years, and I woke up one day and I wasn't really working on climate change anymore. The product portfolio had grown. We'd sold the company to Google. I was doing cool stuff, but I wasn't working on climate. And I was talking to my fiance, Rachel, and she was like, you should quit. You know, you should take some more risk on. You should get back to doing something you love. And I quit. And actually, the week after I left, the pandemic started. So I got the risk part of the equation. And from there, I just started getting obsessed with waste. And I think you mentioned it, Max or Henry, I can't remember which one of you, like, it's a super interesting thing, waste. Like, we're kind of trained to ignore it or believe that it's just this inevitable output of our existence.
Yeah, linear trash.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, there's just going to be trash. But then you sort of sidestep a little bit. And there's no waste in nature. It's a human invention. And like, the question that I sort of started getting obsessed with was like, does it have to be this way? And then I was just seeing trash everywhere, seeing waste everywhere. That sort of sent me down the rabbit hole of learning a little bit. And as was mentioned in the intro, I was really shocked that food is the number one thing in the landfill. Like, I would not have guessed that. And I was also super shocked to know that the food system itself is a quarter of our emissions. You know, I'm not embarrassed to say, like, not that long ago, if you'd asked me, like, what's climate change all about? I would have said, like, well, it's like coal and electricity and transportation, but like food is a huge chunk of it.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, because like carbon tunnel vision, just focusing on emissions from fossil fuels, I mean, it is the number one, but it's not everything. And I think opening that up gives people so much imagination to see where they can plug into other solutions. Because I don't think, we don't want everyone to think that the only way they can help solve climate is through, you know, fossil fuel emissions. There's so many clever and really like creative ways to approach this issue, because there's so much more to it.
Totally. And then it's like, we throw away a third of the food we grow. You know, the emissions associated with food waste and loss are on the order of half of the emissions of the entire food system. And I started thinking about like, okay, so what can we do to fix this? And this was a stat that was mentioned earlier as well, but it's not farms and restaurants and grocery stores that are the biggest contributor of food in landfills. It's us in our homes.
Okay, that's what I wanted to, that was the shocker to me. And I want to really get into that because I'm always very careful to make sure people don't feel walk away from any information that I've shared on Future Earth or here feeling individual guilt and shame. But no. That stat seems to counter that. So can you unpack that a little bit?
Well, so let's talk about individual action versus systems change. I don't think we should feel shame, you know, because it's messed up. It's not easy to do the right thing today.
But I'm painting this picture like walking into any supermarket that we would walk into and you see mountains and mountains of perfect looking oranges in a pyramid and apples in a pyramid, and all this stuff. Like, are you really telling me that more food waste is coming from our homes after we purchase that stuff and eat whatever portion of it that we do and then throw it out than from like supermarkets
2X.
And like ugly produce or whatever, 2X. Like the problem that like Imperfect is trying to solve and all these other companies with the ugly produce or all that stuff.
So just to be clear, like
it's definitely a problem, right? We're all agreed there.
There's a bonkers amount of food waste that occurs, but most of the waste occurs at the consumer stage.
In our houses.
The stats you listed were 51.6% in homes, 34.9% in food service, 11.6% in retail, and 1.1% in manufacturing, with the last one being 0.7% in farm produce itself. And this apparently comes from the Food Waste Monitor Sector Index Nation 2019. Oh, good source. Yeah.
Yeah, what Henry is speaking to there is the food that ends up in landfills, the distribution of it, but even just pure tonnage of food waste and loss, households are the greatest chunk of it. Now,
so crazy.
It's super bonkers, but I don't think we should feel, and just to give a couple other stats, the average American household throws out around 600 pounds of food a year, which is like $2,000 worth of food. I mean, the way that
Have you seen this meme that's like the climate person that needs to finish everybody's plate because they want to avoid food waste? And it's like this animal that's so fat. It's like, that's me.
It's like a capybara.
So, Max, we may be able to save you from that a little bit. But yeah. I mean, there's a couple other interesting things here. So, and one way to visualize that is like the way we sort of operate today is you go to the grocery store, you buy 5 bags of food, and we just leave 2 of them in the parking lot. Now, why does that food waste and loss happen? You know, and why also importantly, does that food end up going to the landfill? And just like scientific sidebar here, another thing I did not know, when food goes to the landfill, there's no oxygen in the landfill. So it breaks down anaerobically. As opposed to aerobically, which would be a composting process, but there's no oxygen. So the microbes in the landfill go at it in an anaerobic fashion. And
you have like all of these individual garbage bags that are just getting piled on top of each other.
And like refrigerators and cars and like just, you know, it's like big and heavy pressure. And the result of that is methane.
And that's the secret sauce for methane, right? That's like, that's literally the methane soup.
So like methane is public enemy number one in the fight against climate change, because it's a short-lived climate pollutant. You know, methane only hangs out in the atmosphere for 12 or so years, but over that time period, it's a superheater of the planet. And over a 20-year period, methane is 80 times more potent than CO2.
So I'm gonna rephrase that as an opportunity.
Totally.
If we really want to reduce emissions really fast, we should absolutely tackle methane because it is more potent but shorter lived.
Totally. And urgent action matters, because I'm sure there are other technologies that come on the podcast that talk about, well, hey, and you know, we can have nuclear fusion someday. And it's like, well, that'll be amazing in 2050, but we got to make sure we don't cook ourselves on the way there. And methane is something we can do in the near term, and it's a big lever. Okay, so back to Max, your good point about like shame and
guilt. Is the majority of the atmospheric methane from waste decomposition
at the landfill? So the biggest contributors, and I should get fact checked on this. I know it's in the top three, but oil and gas pipelines are a big contributor. Enteric emissions from cattle, aka cow burps. By the way, like methane equals natural gas. So like, same thing.
Thank you for that. I was about to do that.
You've got leaks from pipelines. You've got cows burping, and then you've got landfills. These are like the top three, and they vary by state. But assume that landfill emissions are about 20% of our country's methane emissions. And methane emissions are about 10% of our total emissions. So landfill methane emissions are like 2%. And the reason that landfills emit methane is because organic material gets put into them. I want to get back to Max's point, like shame and guilt. I don't think shame and guilt are the right feeling.
I agree.
In general, ever.
I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says, like, I'm gonna waste some food today. Because, like, it's just, first of all, nobody likes wasting food. But second of all, like, it's not rational to do that because food costs money. And I think the way we think about it is, if we're gonna decarbonize the economy, we need systems change. And if systems are going to change, we need systems that are better, easier, faster, more delightful than what exists out there.
System incentives.
And when you look at the systems that exist today, they don't make it easy to do the right thing.
Right.
And I think that's what's kind of cool about what we're doing as a company. There is individual action taking place, right? This is something you can do in your home. But it's a collective effort to build a new system that is circular. So this isn't just, you know, what we're building as a company and as a system isn't just one person doing one action in isolation. A bunch of people taking part in it enables us to build a new pathway and a new loop. And
can you talk about the circularity inherent to the system that you built? Because you're grinding, destinking, digesting, it turns into food, you're feeding that to farms, you're feeding it to chickens.
So it all starts in the kitchen. And the thing that's tricky about dealing with food that we don't eat is that it gets yucky fast. That's a technical term. You know, food is 80% water and it has the tendency to putresce and rot. I think we've all had the experience of like, you cook fish for dinner or you trim some chicken thighs and you put them in your trash can and you know that that bag is going to be nasty after some amount
of time. Well, I'm going to pause and just commend you for being absolutely a way better solution to that problem than Febreze scented trash bags. Probably the worst invention in the world. Now my trash smells like trash and Febreze. Yes, that too. Thank you.
That does not seem like solving the root cause to me.
No.
it's like lipstick on a pig or Febreze on a trash can.
No, it's problem on a problem. It's just a compounding problem. You know, again, much like my dating life.
So,
oh my goodness.
I'm going to move on. So
I think Henry needs to take a nap.
What the magic trick is that we do is when you take the water out of food, it doesn't rot. Because the microbes that like to break food down and make it stinky don't operate at 13% moisture content. We've just dried it out.
And this water's evaporated. You've heated and evaporated. So it's not like there's no drainage. There's nothing. There's no like stinky juices and garbage.
Nope. You know, I'm not going to attempt to like paint a picture. You can go to mill.com to see the bin, but it's about 2 feet tall. It's white. It's been described as svelte. And you put the food scraps in that you can't eat and we dry them out. And now they're little and stable and they don't smell. And the bin itself, it's pretty freaking cool for Rachel and me. It takes us like a month to fill it up, which is wild. And your trash doesn't stink anymore and your trash can doesn't fill up.
Why doesn't it smell? What's the science behind it?
The science behind it is when you dry food out, it doesn't rot. And it's the rotting of food that makes
it. It's the decomposition, right? Okay.
I mean, if you put your head in there, it sort of smells faintly of like cooked food and spices, which kind of makes sense because what kinds of food really smell when they're dry? Spices.
I'm gonna pause there for a quick like very real testimonial. This all came about because I was at a friend's house who has a mill. And I'll say, like, it looks like, can I call it like, it looks like the Apple of trash bins.
Okay. I will let you say that. You can
say that. It's very sexy trash look bin looking thing. And he opened it up and his two daughters ran to it. And they wanted to be the ones to put the stuff in the mill. And they stuck their heads in and smelled it and went, mmm. And then I did it too. And I was like, oh, wow.
It smells like food.
What, wood chips and fall evenings.
Well, and so that's the thing. Food smells good. And what's in the bin is still food. So that's a neat thing. Max, I love that you got to experience one in the wild. We're going to start shipping soon, but we have a few bins out there in the universe. And I'm so stoked that you got to see one. So the bin takes a long time to fill up. And this unlocks different pathways for the material. Because normally, if you're trying to get food that someone hasn't eaten somewhere, you got to get it there fast. Or else you've got like a pile of muck that you're dealing with. But with this, we're not in a rush because it's stable. And
it's stable as a food source for animals.
It's stable as what it is, as food.
It's just stable as it's not stinky and it's not causing problems.
Yeah, and then we get to decide what we're going to do with it. And Max, you nailed it at the beginning. Like, the best thing we can do about food waste and loss is not waste food in the first place. The next best thing we can do is feed it to a person. The next best thing we can do is feed it to an animal. And that's the pathway we're sort of thinking about because it, and that hierarchy, if anybody wants to Google it, is from the EPA. The EPA has a food waste recovery hierarchy, which basically says these are the highest and best uses.
I always get upset about this, that like we have such a massive food waste problem in this country. And at the same time, we have a massive industry for animal food. Never made sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think the stat is if you look at the surface of the earth that is not covered by ice, one third of it is used to grow food for animals.
Right.
And it's like a third of the grain we grow is for animal feed. And again, just to talk about it sort of economically and mechanically, feed prices are going up, food prices are going up. And meanwhile, we're sending 50 million tons of food to the landfill. So Max, to your point, like, can we cut waste out of this system? If we can divert food from the landfill, stabilize it, it turns out it's really good stuff. High in protein, high in micro macronutrients. Chickens love it. We've asked them.
How are you ensuring that it's really good stuff?
Chickens love it. You just skipped over the fact that he said chickens love it. We've asked them.
But so Henry, so it doesn't go straight. It doesn't go straight to the
chicken
farm.
Surveyed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like 9 out of 12 chickens recommend. No joke though. There's a lot of work and thoughtfulness that goes into making corn and soy and wheat interesting to a chicken.
Right.
And it's like, if you were a chicken, like you like to scratch and peck and you're omnivorous and you like things of different flavor and texture. So, again, it's like this ends up being the better thing for the planet, but at the same time, you want to think about what's a better system, what's creating a better outcome. Because that's the way that things click into place that aren't reliant on, oh, I feel guilty about the climate, or I feel like I should do this. It's just, oh, this is a better kitchen experience. This is a better chicken feeding experience for a farmer, you name it. So Henry, to your question.
Stinky trash is a real problem, right? The kitchen experience is a real thing. Right now, we put the trash under the sink, we let it rot, it stinks, and then we take it out once every, 3 days, 4 days, whatever it is.
I mean, we did surveying on this, like a non-trivial percentage of the American population takes the trash out every day. And it's like, that's a chore. It's not a fun chore. You pay in many places based on the volume that you send to the landfill. Not to mention, like, if you're living in an apartment building, like the trash room can be a scary place.
I also feel like people are doing that not just because they don't want the trash in their house. So they do it every day. I think it's because we're creating so much trash that they're probably filling their trash very often.
Totally. And this is like a crazy experience. You start source separating out your food, and like your trash bin doesn't fill up hardly as fast.
Yeah, that's me. I don't really have it. I kind of use like whatever paper bag.
Right.
I don't even have a trash bin anymore.
Because it's just like a few pieces of, hard to recycle plastic films and things like that that might end up in there. Henry, you asked at one point, like, how do you know it's good stuff getting to the chicken? So
right.
The box that you send in the mail, and by the way, we've got a partnership with the U.S. Postal Service. So, you get the bin, you get pre-labeled boxes, which are like the Apple version of a box to send chicken feed in, if that makes sense. They like origami pop up. They've got a shipping label pre-printed. You know, you only do it every once in a while, and then you tap an app, and then USPS will come pick it up on your doorstep.
It's a very elegant experience.
We thought about it. That goes to us. And we've got a facility where we sift and sort and reheat and test the material to make sure that it's good to go, as an ingredient.
Right. You turn it into animal food at that point. You process it. Okay.
As an ingredient.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. And there's good
Are
things.
Are you able to convert that to dirt there at that point too, though? Like, so now it's sorted, tested. Is there like a byproduct that can easily be turned into dirt? Or even somebody lives in the suburbs and they don't ship it to you, can they just dig a hole and put it in the hole?
So let's be careful about nomenclature. I'm not exactly sure how to define dirt, so I'm not going to use that word.
Also fair.
So what comes out of our bin is food. You could take that food and compost it and turn it into a soil amendment. Now, you should not take the food that comes out of our bin and sprinkle it on your plants in your house, because when you water that food, it will turn back into food, and then you will have
stinky
food on your plants. You know, it's possible you could put this in a composting tumbler in your backyard. You could work this into a garden bed, but it's potent stuff. And soil, if you're growing food in your backyard, the soil can and should be amended once or twice a year. But think about amending the soil at like a 1 ratio of food grains to 10 ratio of soil. And the average American household is throwing away like 600 pounds of food a year. So you're making like 100 pounds of food grains. So you'd need like 1,000 pounds of soil to amend. What I'm trying to say is you make a lot of this. So you can compost it. And I would encourage anyone who has a backyard garden plot to compost some portion of it. But you're probably going to make more than you need. Especially if you, like many of us, don't have a big garden out back.
Right. Okay. Makes sense.
And then when you asked, when it gets to our facility, the goal is to get as much of this as possible, back into the food system as food. But yeah, I could imagine like there could be some portion of overs, and those overs could be composted.
And so what happens at that step? It gets back to you. Now you've tested it. It's good to go. Chickens.
Yeah, so
get us to the chickens.
So right now we're working through all of the scientific and regulatory processes to unlock our ability to sell this as a commercial ingredient in feed. And it's freaking rad. We get to work with all sorts of different people on this because like nobody's ever actually tried to do what we're doing. There are processes today where you can take uneaten food from a grocery store and preserve the nutrients and get that back in the food system. But nobody's ever tried to do this at this scale to get recovered household food back into the food system in this way. So, we haven't shipped and launched publicly. That's coming soon. You know, Max, your friend who has a bin, who's been sending materials back to us, I hope, all of that is being used, in the R&D process and in the regulatory process to get us to the point where, a card-carrying egg-laying chicken could eat it.
Well, I can tell you for sure it's being used for child amazement and wonder.
So and that's important. And that's important. You think about how to change behavior, how to make something sticky, and it's like it being fun and delightful is important. And it being intuitive.
I have a very I'm not saying I do this, but I have a very specific moment that made me so curious about waste. I was doing a reforesting project in Gabon in Africa, and I was working with an agroforestry, someone who does agroforestry. And I was walking and I saw him squatting at the nursery of banana plants that we had just planted the day before. And when he came over, I was just like, "Eric, did you just take a shit on our bananas?" And he was like, "Yeah, fertilizer." And I was just mind blown. Like, here I am, this fresh out of college girl that thought that like poop belongs in a toilet. And
I
then
mean,
that was my moment. Sorry for the sidebar, but it just.
no. I mean, there is no waste in nature.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
And this is like, it gets kind of heady.
That was a great way of contextualizing the poop story.
I'm tracking with Max. It's pretty crazy, right? Like
It's really crazy.
food is the best stuff in the world. And
But
like
also, poop is the best stuff in
poop is the best stuff in the world.
the
But like what we do with the food today is
It's the coolest.
we throw it away in a plastic bag. We truck it around in a diesel truck and we bury it in the ground and make poison.
Doesn't make any sense.
But
Not one step of it.
so just for fun, I looked up the total metric tons that are produced in feed, and the largest, the CP Group based out of Thailand, produces 27,000 metric tons per year annually, and the top 10 produce a little over 200, it looks like, thousand metric tons. You guys, if you brought this to scale, just for fun, and you were producing feed, how much of that would you be able, how much, if every American household had a mill, would we be able to produce in feed? And in turn, how much land do we think that would free up and that would save?
It's a great question. So,
Harry, you're good with math, so I feel like you're going to answer it.
I mean, I'm going to try, we got to do it for a better world. So,
I'm like, if a train leaves Chicago with food on it.
Henry, I'm actually not super familiar with the source that you just quoted, but what I can say is there are currently precisely 27 billion chickens on Earth today. And
Oh.
if we were to
That's
take
one chicken for every how many
Three
people?
chicken, three, three chickens for
Or
every person, something like
person.
that.
Okay.
Unless one runs afoul.
Oh, God.
I feel like we just lost a listener. In any case,
Five.
but we gained a friend. In any case, I think the way to contextualize it and answer your question, Henry, is if we took every ounce of the 50 million tons of food that we throw in a landfill every year and converted that into chicken feed at some reasonable inclusion rate, I think we would feed a single digit percentage of the chickens in the United States. So, like the numbers that you
We're in
read, Henry,
shock. No one can see our shock faces. Henry and I are in shock.
no, a third of the Earth's surface is used to grow food to feed animals. So it's like there's infinite sort of resources and commodities that go into feeding chickens. So we're not going to run out of hungry chickens at any point soon. And Max, now I'm remembering you brought up a point too, which was like, well, does this make sense as well? Like, is feeding livestock a good idea? If we're trying to decarbonize the planet. I'm not trying to ask myself a question here. I think this came up at one point, but I think Henry, to answer your question, even if we repurpose all the food that we throw away today, that's not going to overwhelm the chicken feed market, let's say.
Got it. Well, it would be nice if it was replacing the chicken feed market. But Harry, let's take it to some basic recommendations for our listeners. Now, of course, purchasing a mill is a big one, and I would assume that you are just wanting to make the plug for your differentiator for your competitors. So, what's the reason to purchase the mill over some of the other in-home composter trash bin alternatives?
I am going to answer that question with things you can do, but I'm going to answer your other question as well, and you can edit this out if you'd like. But
Sick.
the question, the part like 4C of your last question is how much land would it free up, you know, per household?
Ooh.
And like, I think we have assumed that a household can produce around 100 pounds of feed ingredient per year. And if we were displacing, I don't know, call it like wheat in a full feed at a one-to-one ratio, you could eliminate, to grow that much wheat, you'd need like 1,500 to 2,000 square feet of land, which is kind of interesting. You know, like it's like 100 okay. by, you know, it's a, that would be like a 40 by 40 box of land that is required to grow the wheat that could be replaced by the food.
That's a great visual for your deck.
That the average household sends to the landfill.
Okay.
And sorry, the question was like, what are five things that I'd recommend people do? Is that the question?
Right.
Not yes. five. Five is a lot.
Okay, three.
Five's a lot.
One?
Sure, we'll go for three.
Whatever you
sure.
want.
Three's good. I mean, yeah, I'm like on the food waste train. So I think like as an individual, like it's really important to reduce the amount of
food. Oh, so number one's waste less.
Right. Waste less. And I think like waste prevention is a really interesting lens to look at everything. You know, when we have waste right. in systems, we have inefficiency, but we also have pollution, emittance, anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
what are CO2 right. emissions other than waste? It's some form of That's energy it. That hasn't been captured. I think it's just an interesting Very lens. Open. Like the world that we need to create is a world that has less waste across all sectors.
Waste is a design flaw.
Totally. And I think that's what's exciting about the opportunity in any industry when you're able to prevent waste or reduce waste is you're going to end up with a system that's more efficient, and that more efficient system can replace the existing system. So, but yeah, I guess one, I would say keep an eye on your food waste and landfill really bad. I think number two is there's just like amazing resources out there that you can read and learn from. It's not just because it goes with mill, but I'm not sure if people are familiar with Grist, GRIST.org. It's an amazing publication.
Grist for the mill.
Grist for the mill. Amazing publication that's talking about change all over the planet. And
Grist
folks...
is a free nonprofit environment and climate news website. So yes, highly recommend Grist.
Highly recommend Grist.org. Highly recommend checking out Drawdown. Highly recommend, you know, like, consuming interesting books and materials to just like get smart on this big problem. And then I think third, yeah, I mean, I will plug like check out Mill. You know, it's a cool thing that we're working on, and
Mill.com
and we're building a new system. You know, it's not just a bin for your house. It's a full circular new pathway to keep food out of the landfill and get it back to the food system.
I like the way you put that, because so often when I talk about education, people are like, well, what's the point of learning? It's just going to make me sad, and I'm going to feel helpless and all these things. But you went through this journey where you got obsessed with waste, and then it made you hyper aware, I'm sure, and just even more curious, and led to a solution. So I think that's really awesome. And
I appreciate that. I mean, I think it's interesting when I think about building Mill in 2022 versus joining Nest in 2012, like climate was a big part of the reason I joined Nest, because I loved how the thermostat was this like beautiful thing that was practical, that people wanted, and it also did the right thing for the planet. But fast forward a decade, it feels like climate is really at the top of the list and a driving force for a lot of the best people in the world and what they want to work on. You know, as a founder, I think my job is basically to like hire people that are smarter than I am and then just get out of the way. It's overwhelming and a total honor to see that people who are the best at their thing in their fields, who have good jobs, you know, are excited to take a leap into the unknown to work on a problem that matters. And I think, you know, for people that get excited about a climate problem, it's a really, the climate out there is not, the climate for climate is not good, but the climate for building a climate company is good. There are lots of people that want to work on this.
That was a tongue twister.
Go yeah. work on climate tech. Let's go,
just say
people.
That one again. The climate for climate is not good, but the climate for people that want to work in climate is getting hot.
Is hot. yeah. It's
for the win.
I gotta workshop that. I feel like Henry. Maybe we can like do a one-on-one after this, and you can help me.
That'll be a sidebar. We can do that. Harry, thank you so very much for joining us on the pod.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
You are really, really, really doing God's garbage work. And I am very, very excited for the scale and the impact that you can have. Some of those numbers and considering how much land is saved, how much waste is saved is are staggering. They're really incredible. Max, do you have any final comments or questions?
Can I get to the top of the wait list for a mil?
I'll see what I can do. Ooh.
Why do you think we're here, Harry? No, I'm kidding.
Yep. She never asks, Harry.
I know someone at the company. So
okay,
you know a guy who knows a guy, right? So who's in charge of
I'm just going to put this last thing. This was very interesting. We are two like little ADD kids that are way too curious with all the questions. And I think maybe seven times I caught Harry coming back to a question that was like 5 minutes prior while he was answering another one of our interjections.
Right, the next
Harry,
question, yeah.
We really just, you deserve a nice
you deserve a golf
right
clap.
Now.
Well,
yeah, and a great editor after this, yeah.
I'm just happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. This was really awesome. Thanks for joining.
Thank you again, Harry. I am Henry Lin.
And I'm Max Moynihan.
And this was another episode of Better World. Thank you for joining us, and join us again to hear a little bit more about how you can make the world better. Welcome.